Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With us today is Daniel McAdams, our co-host. Daniel, good to see you.
Happy Easter Monday, Dr. Paul. How are you?
It is. Some people took the day off.
Not us.
But,
never.
After having Friday off and Saturday and Sunday, I guess we have to try to get back here.
Right.
And
we don't want to be weak.
Save the world.
Yeah.
Well, the bombs aren't dropping in Ukraine yet. But there's more people warning about it. We've talked about it for a long time, ever since. We talked a lot about it in 2014. But that was when the peace candidate, you know, Nobel Peace Prize winner, Barack Obama, he was in office. So we didn't have to worry, but we talked about it anyway. And we said, this can't help, you know, having a coup in there. Why don't we just let the people there settle the dispute? But it was a major dispute, but it was a continuation of the Cold War, Europe against the Soviets. But the Soviets were gone, but they still had that going on. And actually, immediately after the end of the Cold War, the next Cold War was warming up, because that's when we made deals with Eastern Europe to put our weapons over there. And I was surprised at how anxious these countries were to put the weapons in. And we had ways of blackmailing and pressuring them into doing it. So it's there. But now they're arguing over this. And just recently, there's the big thing is, why is there a military buildup?
Yeah.
And there's been threats, threats by the Ukrainians, which are the ones who have the country since the coup occurred back when it was leaning too much and was way too friendly to the Russians, even though a large number of people there were Russian, and that's why they were friendly. But since that then, we have been protecting that country, but they've been arguing about borders, they've been arguing about Crimea, they argue about, you know, the eastern part of Ukraine, and it's going to continue. But now, what's happened now, there's people who are cheering them on. People say, you know, but the military industrial complex always cheers them on, and weapons are being sent over there, and people are saying, well, it's all Russia's fault. They're amassing a large number of troops. It's all their fault. But when you look and read about it, you realize that there's a reaction from the West, and that includes the European Union, NATO, United States, and it's mostly the United States, because we're the ones with the most money and the most weapons, and we can pressure people into it. So it's been stirring up. There's been threats, and we just wonder if we'll get the interview. I wonder if Hunter Biden will come on and talk to us about this. Maybe he could explain this. But if they get his computer, and maybe there'll be some information there. But nevertheless, he by himself didn't cause this problem, but he might have been right in the middle of it and might have information about it.
Well, it all goes back to the 2014 coup. And I like what you wrote about in your column this week, because it's whenever there's an unproven allegation that Russia was interfering in our elections, they're going against the rules-based international order. But why isn't, as you say, against the rules-based international order to literally overthrow an elected government, which is what we did? It all goes back to the coup, just like all the problems in Iraq go back to the illegal invasion. All the problems in Libya go back to the invasion. The problems in Syria go back to the U.S. fomenting an overthrow of the government. They're using jihadists. It all goes back to interventionism. Yet somehow, Dr. Paul, I don't understand why our message of stop intervening doesn't get through, because it should. I guess it doesn't bring as many dividends. But, you know, the idea that things are heating up in Ukraine is pretty obvious, and you covered it very well in your piece. Biden said Crimea is Ukraine. That's a clear signal to Ukraine to take it back through the use of force. And the message was received by the Ukrainian president, who is, of course, a close ally. We keep giving him money and weapons. Here's what he said on April 2nd. He told his own people, President Biden has assured me that Ukraine would never be left alone against Russian aggression. The U.S. and the EU, quote, promised full and unwavering support. This, as Ukraine is building up its weapons, it's talking war. And then here comes Lloyd Austin, our defense secretary, who not long ago, as you pointed out, was in the missile making and launching business in Raytheon. And he, quote, reaffirmed unwavering support for Ukraine's sovereignty, territorial integrity, and Euro-Atlantic aspirations. He also reiterated, quote, the U.S. commitment to building the capacity of Ukraine's forces to defend more effectively against Russian aggression. Clearly, the U.S. top officials are pushing Zelensky, they're baiting Zelensky into provoking Russia into some sort of defensive counterattack or something of that sort. They're chomping at the bit for this war, and that's why we're scratching our heads wondering why. Right.
You know, I've always had trouble with this because that's what it looks like, and we can say it, and it might be that, but it's so hard for me to believe that they sit down there and say, okay, this is what we do to have a war. They probably, I would think they have to be, if they're human beings, would argue at least the softer case of, well, we need to do this because we need to regain the territory that belongs to us, and always hoping maybe they don't have to have war. But then there's times where the evidence is so overwhelming that they do want war. And but what have they done? They've turned it around. They said it's the Russians or the aggressors. They're moving troops that way. They moved them close to the border. Well, you know, they're just responding. But I think the military evidence of the likelihood of Russia is going to invade that country, they don't have the equipment or the military power and the personnel to do that. But they're going to be able to rebel because there's some land in eastern Ukraine which is still in great dispute.
And that's
as long as we take this very strong position about Crimea, well, the Ukrainians put Crimea and eastern Ukraine together, us all together. So, yeah, maybe they would settle something and let Russia have Ukraine back or Crimea back again. But it's not likely for the European Union, NATO, and all the whole Western civilization here to go along with that, because we need that enemy, and you know, we need the incentive to build the weapons, and so there's never really a likelihood of having serious conversation with the Russians. Yet that has happened in the past. You know, when it became necessary, we actually talked to them. And but this is for historians and for people to pick a side, they have to look at the facts, and they really have to start exactly what you mentioned first. They have to look at the coup. Why is it coup? And like I was put down one time for saying, look at the history of Iran if you really want to understand it. You have to go back to 1953. Oh, we don't want to talk about the history. We want to talk about this right now.
Yeah, of course.
So you have to look at how it comes about, or you're not going to come up with a solution.
Well, you know, parts of eastern Ukraine, the Donbass, large parts of them voted 90% for Yanukovych, the president who was closer to Russia. 90%, and then the U.S. came in and helped overthrow that elected government. So is anyone shocked that these people are a little bit ticked off? Hey, you overthrew our president. We don't want this guy. We don't want the guy you put in there. We don't want the guy Victoria Nuland, who, by the way, is back in an even more powerful position than she was when she helped foment the coup there. We don't want these people leading our country. We didn't vote for them. We never voted for them, and they've oppressed us. But the Russians are moving troops in the area, and you pointed out too. Can you imagine if China installed a hostile government in Mexico, and they said, "Hey, we're going to take back Texas, we're going to take back Arizona, we're going to take back California," and they started massing troops on the border? I have a hard time believing that that Lloyd Raytheon Austin wouldn't be putting some Raytheons on the border and getting upset. But let's look at a couple of these pictures. The troops are moving. Russian troops are moving toward the area. There have been plenty of things photographed. Let's look at the next one. But what's interesting, and this is the reason we tied it to Hunter Biden, is that, you know, we read about the interview. I didn't watch the interview, but we both read about the interview over the weekend with Hunter Biden, where he made, I think, kind of a bombshell. The laptop, quote, could absolutely be mine, but then again, it could have been rushed. It could have been hijacked. It could have had stuff put on it. I don't know. But he admits that it's possible that the laptop was his. And that's a big deal, because if you remember, and Glenn Greenwald has a great piece out, and we have a little excerpt on the RonPaulInstitute.org homepage, where he talks about how the media ran circles trying to say we can't talk about the laptop because it's Russian disinformation. Mainstream media, let's look at the next two clips and I'll throw it back to you why we couldn't. It was just before the election. This was a bombshell that came out. Hunter Biden's story is Russian disinfo, dozens of former Intel officials say. And the next one, these stenographers who repeat this, dozens of former intelligence officials signed a letter warning Hunter Biden, warning that the Hunter Biden story could be Russian disinformation. That was also key. That's as key as the coup, Dr. Paul, because with that cue, with these former Intel officers saying it's Russian disinformation, that gave the media the cue, hey, don't cover it. Don't do anything about it.
You know, it seems like they need to cover their bases. The authorities that's in the secret government and in the military-industrial complex. So they have two fronts right now, because I would think the American people have been bamboozled more to hate Chinese than they are the Russians right now. And yet, what worries me is because I still don't want to believe. Oh yeah. It's been decided there will be a war next month, and we're going to start killing people. And I think they probably think that they can get what they want by just scaring people, intimidating, who knows what's in their mind. But what bothers me more is an accidental military accident where a bunch of people get killed, or a false flag.
Yeah.
That's been much more likely than the idea that for them to say, well, the Russians are ready to invade militarily and the tanks are going to roll into Ukraine. I don't think that's going to happen, but there could be some accidents happen and then blame Russia. Maybe there's others that think, well, we haven't done a good enough job to get the American people really, really upset with the Russians. So we have to get them proved to our country that they have killed a lot of people and they're dangerous enough. We have to do something about it, and then the conflict escalates. But the lines are there, and they've been there, and they're probably not a whole lot different during the Cold War.
Yeah.
You know, it shifts a little bit there. But there's not a strong desire for national sovereignty and take it an independent something somewhat in the direction of what Switzerland tries to do. You know, we're in the midst of this chaos. They want to avoid the appearance that they're pro-West or pro-right during the Cold War anyway, and even during World War II that happened. But right now. They're still intimidated by our power and our wealth. I don't think they have figured out that the wealth that we have that we can intimidate is rather fragile.
Yeah.
So I've always predicted that when push comes to shove, and we run out of the moral authority and we run out of the money, that a lot of people are going to be leaving us, because that's what they're starting to do now, because less number of countries are using the dollar as the reserve currency, and that can lead to more economic conflicts. But right now, this is a big issue going on, you know, and a lot of people are writing and worrying about this now. But it'll be interesting to see. But the one point I wanted to make is, you know, Barack Obama, really, foreign policy-wise, he sort of got away with it, and there was hardly anything going on or discussion, and certainly wouldn't be from the media. And the distraction was he won the Nobel Peace Prize.
Yeah.
So, but, well, I mean, he left a mess. He left a mess in Syria. He left a mess in Ukraine. He left a mess in Libya.
Yeah.
And he didn't really do much to... Stop the war in Afghanistan.
No, that was a good war.
Yeah.
Well, the thing about Hunter Biden, he says, yeah, that could have been my laptop, but, you know, I don't remember taking it to the repair shop. It had some water damage. But in the same interview, he says, yeah, you know, I spent 13 days without sleeping, smoking crack, and drinking vodka. Now, I'm not an expert on health, but I think missing 13 days of sleep while high on drugs might affect your memory. But the question is, we know from the New York Post's coverage, which was censored by social media and completely ignored by the other mainstream media, we know from what they said, and that the facts have never been disputed by Biden or his family, if what's if what's in the laptop is true, that poses a real danger to President Biden himself, because as we learned from some subsequent interviews with Tucker Carlson of Hunter's business partners, the big guy was Joe Biden and he was getting his cut, if these things are true. So the question is, if all these things start leaking out, if the laptop information starts getting some more coverage, starts getting the disinfectant of light, and it shows that Joe Biden was up to his eyebrows in this very corrupt business dealing, not only in Ukraine, but in China, surely a president wouldn't launch or help launch a military action to cover for his own domestic problems at home, right?
Yeah, but truth seems to be relative. If this breaks out and people do know exactly how much the Bidens were involved and how much guilt they should be sharing with the people, with their friends in the media and everywhere else in the Justice Department, just look at the Russiagate things. I mean, did we find justice? We did get some information out that finally dispelled it, but the damage by then has been done. And just think of all the laws that have been broken in these past several years, especially since they were been after Trump. Nobody ever goes to jail. Has there been anything illegal about some of the voting? I happen to believe there wasn't, but I happen to believe there wasn't adequately investigated. Yeah. So the establishment is really in charge. I see the control of the Justice Department and the FBI as a cover. But if it's true as what you say or you imply, maybe they will wake up. But I don't think we're going to live to the day where you're going to see anybody that is in office is going to be in prison or something.
No.
But even though they may deserve it.
Yeah. Well, there is a precedent for this kind of action. We remembered it. I was working for you on the Hill at the time, and this is in 2008 when Georgia decided, you know what, NATO's got my back. NATO was saying, hey, you're going to be a member pretty soon. The U.S. was saying, Saakashvili, you're our guy. We love you. So they felt, okay, they have our back. So Saakashvili went into South Ossetia. He went in very quickly at night, and he was very quickly sent home licking his haunches because the Russians moved all the way to Tbilisi. But they didn't occupy Georgia as they might have. They pulled back out after they stabilizing. So, and then subsequent, of course, it was all blamed on Russian aggression, but a subsequent investigation by the EU itself determined that that Georgia was responsible for provoking the war, for starting the war. So we have this precedent set. We see this set in motion. Clearly, Zelensky feels that Washington will come to his aid. Clearly, they feel that the United States military will launch a war against Russia if somehow he gets Russia to attack, or if Russia goes on its own, which I don't believe that would happen, on its own unprovoked into eastern Ukraine. He believes this, and the fact that he believes it, I think in economics it's moral hazard, right? It causes him to act more recklessly than he normally would if he knew that he only had his rinky-dink army behind him. So that's the real danger. But Dr. Paul, the Russia of 2021 is different than the Russia of 2014 as well. Mm-hmm. And I think that's very important because, number one, they really, really deeply feel now that the U.S. is not a rational actor. It's not a partner. It's not acting as an entity that you can talk to. And that's very dangerous, with Biden saying that Putin is an evil killer and has no soul. And the other thing that's important to remember is that many citizens of Donbass now have Russian passports. They were opened up to those people to get Russian passports. So there is a sort of legitimate concern, and the U.S. does it all the time, protecting U.S. citizens abroad, protecting Russian citizens abroad, and it gives kind of a green light. So there are a few very important, I think, differences from 2014. I don't believe, my biggest fear is that the people in Washington, the foreign policy experts, are believing their own propaganda.
Be careful when you use that word, experts,
yeah.
Because sometimes, yes, they do believe their own stuff, and it isn't very helpful. But, all this could have been prevented if the two-party system the one-party system, had actually been exposed to the possibility of having a different type of foreign policy, a foreign policy that was talked about in our early history, you know, by the founders and the way the Constitution was set up. We weren't supposed to be able to do these kind of things. This whole idea, there is no rule of law. The executive order thing, along with this COVID, you know, the epidemic.
Yeah.
Everybody writes the laws, and nobody even really questions. Republicans and Democrats write the laws, and yet that was never intended. But they just don't have the authority to do these things, and people have to be scared. The American people have to be scared, you know, in order to go along with this, and that's. That is a problem, but they control the apparatus, and you know the old saying: scare the living daylights out of them, and tell them that you're going to be invaded, and the people will do anything you tell them because they don't want to be called unpatriotic. And look at this stuff with lockdown here in this country.
Yeah.
It's public pressure now. They don't have they have some bad cops out there pestering people and throwing them out of churches.
Yeah.
But the police really just is the neighborhood that people frown on it and say they'll and they turn you in and they call the police and the business people you know go along with it, but that happens internationally as well. I mean the military industrial complex has been known to be very much involved for a long time, and if you study the rise of Hitler, you'll find out that big business and government blended together pretty bad, pretty easily, and that's why it got so bad. But I think the failure of us to even understand or ever be taught in our schools that a non-interventionist foreign policy. It's a good policy. It's what the Constitution said. It's a moral policy. It's one if you care about peace and not needlessly killing millions of people and sending young people off. There's nothing that has disturbed me more than, now it's 10, 15 years ago, that I was getting on an airplane. That was back when I got on airplanes. And I saw a young man, he was probably 22 or so, and he was sitting up front and getting some attention. And then when we stopped and somebody had to get his suitcase down, I could see why somebody had to help him because he had no arms.
Wow.
And I just know, you know, that you know where he lost his arms.
Yeah.
Not fighting a war for the Constitution and for peace. And that is why getting involved is so terrible. And you know the story, and you were there probably when they told me, don't worry about this declaration.
Yeah.
That's anachronistic.
Yeah.
We don't look at that. So if you don't have the restraints in place, then there are no restraints once after they start. And that's when the people, the hoodlums move in. And that's what they are. When they can make these billions and billions of dollars, and then you guess what? They blame it on free enterprise.
So
we don't want this free enterprise. Look at what it has done. It enhanced the power of the banks and the big corporations, and it's nothing more than the disastrous immoral management by government.
Well, you can bet one thing, the people who sent people off to these illegal and immoral wars kept all of their arms, both of their arms. They never lost them in the process. But you know, we also have a little clip up on the RPI website, RonPaulInstitute.org, from Peter Van Buren. And I'm just thinking about what you said earlier about the role of the media. His has a great piece more on the pandemic than Georgia necessarily, but he talks about how the COVID fear playbook was identical to the post 9/11 fear playbook, and how the whole thing, it turns out, is politicized. And he has a couple of great quotes from very Democrat left-leaning publications like Salon and The Atlantic, where they're literally now admitting, yes, we pushed this lockdowns, we pushed this, we knew it didn't work, we pushed it because we knew it was great for political leverage against Trump. And they're openly admitting it now.
I encourage
everyone to go to the website and take a look at that. But we're seeing the same thing now after how many years, at least four, maybe 8 years or 12 years of this anti-Russia propaganda. I think Americans are willing to believe anything. And if they're told that the Russians invaded Ukraine, they'll believe it. They won't think twice about it.
the only tool we have, since we don't have, you know, the finances that are necessary, the only thing that we have is our sincere effort to sort this these problems out and try to find the truth and relay it. And I think that has value, and I think we do get converts out there. We don't always hear from them, but I think truth spreads. I think there is some very great benefits about even word of mouth. There was a time when you didn't have to wade through you know, Facebook and all these other things to find out who's telling the truth, and the message will get out. But I do think that people can recognize when the truth is being told. And I know that many times they welcome the truth because it's going to enhance their position financially or politically. And so they deal and work with the whole idea, don't tell truth. And of course, that's the ultimate test in the authoritarian societies, especially communism. Truth is important. But who establishes the truth?
Yeah.
It's always the state.
The party.
You know, the state is up here, and they place the state in a godlike position, and it ends up badly. So we aren't like the Soviets were with putting the state in a godlike position. But in many ways, something's happening in this country when you read every weekend or every daily about how a preacher or a priest is called the police to close down the churches over the Easter holiday. Yeah. They were closing down masses because who knows why?
Yeah.
But it is you know, I think so much of what's going on, whether it's undeclared war and all that activity, or counterfeiting our currencies, or what's going on with COVID. This is very much, you know, anti-religious, anti-Christian, and it doesn't mean that it's people who are spiritual is what they want, and that's a little broader than just saying that they're trying to close down Christian churches.
You know, what's most disturbing, as you just say, it's not, we're not putting the state as a godlike entity, but what I think is happening is they're putting the state in partnership with pseudo-private companies as the godlike conglomerate,
right?
Because the government is enlisting these private entities to push the government propaganda, and the reason they're doing it willingly. And I'm just going to close with a couple of clips. The first one I think really demonstrates that. If we can look at this this next clip, this is from the Wall Street Journal. That's a sponsored ad, but it says, "Free fries in San Francisco, mini cheesecake in Brooklyn, arcade tokens in Oklahoma City. Here are the deals you can get with your vaccination card." And we know very well that the government wants you to get your vaccine passport. And so these pseudo-private companies that are doing the bidding of the state are pushing government propaganda, and it's quite disgusting. And I'm going to do one final one before I close, Dr. Paul, because I want to put up this, again, another chart. Remember, it's been about a month since Governor Abbott said open up 100%. A month has passed. We heard it would be a bloodbath. We heard that Texas would be, there wouldn't be a living soul left in Texas except a couple armadillos. Well, yesterday the daily deaths were only 20 people in the entire state of Texas from COVID. That doesn't mean that it's disappearing or that people aren't dying, but it means that once again, as it's happened every time, every super spreader event, every time they warn that something's going to happen, they're wrong every single time. Yet they never have to answer for being wrong all the time.
There you go. You know, people who have been thinking about these problems are disgusted with it, but they're not at the point where enough is enough and I'm not going to put up with it any longer, and I'm going to do something for my kids because they can't get an education, and on and on. But it's the incrementalism that is so bad. They give a little bit. I think the mask thing is a typical thing. You know, at the beginning it was just a little bit, and now it's massive. Not one mask, two masks, three masks, and then they admit they don't do any good, and yet you still have to do it. Well, get a vaccine. Oh, that'll help. But you still have to have your mask on. It's just horrible. So I think, though, the vaccine passports might be the one that, or hopefully, that the people finally wake up. That's enough. I am not going to put up with a passport, you know, identifier in my body. I mean, that is a sacrifice. That solidifies, you know, the whole concept that our lives belong to the government. I always said the military draft was a symbol of who owns our body and the Internal Revenue Service, because they own everything and they allow you how to spend it. They own liberty, and now you are going to get permission to use a little bit. They're going to divvy it out a little bit, piece of that. You'll never get back what you should have, but that is what's happening. And then this is their guide for how to do it. Where you go, what you do, and what store you can go in, or what baseball game you can go, where you can go to school. If this is not stopped, it is true. The people who are making these dire predictions about how bad things are going to get, if this continues, it is going to be bad. Right now, I mean, there's still an effort. There's still an ability for us to speak out, if nothing else, one-on-one, talk to friends, and people can spread a message. It's just too bad, and it's still available. We're on the internet, and we reach a few people, and so we have to do that, and we have to, if we stick to our guns and speak the truth and tell and warn people and put it in a moral tone. It's not the pragmatic tone of taxation and regulations. Business people, well, if you put this regulation in for me, then and take care of my taxes, I'll send you some money so you can be in office. None of that utilitarian pragmatism. You have to have a basic principle of what life and liberty is. But the government doesn't give us our liberty, and that's what they're teaching us now. They're giving us our liberty back, one piece at a time. But I can guarantee you one thing. If you think you're going to get all your liberty back by one piece at a time, it ain't going to happen. So this is why we have to take a stand. And one, is these vaccine passport. That can't be allowed to go on because that makes it worse. But the whole rest has to stop too. We hear statistics, you know, Fauci and the others, by September everything is going to be okay. But they don't tell you, except that you'll get all your freedoms back unless you can get them back unless you have your vaccination, your passport. Passports here. Passport is a sign of an authoritarian government, and we have to get together and say, yes, we have to stand up for a free society and figure out and to be able to defend the position that our life and our liberties don't come from our government. They can't give that to us. It comes from a natural law from God, our Creator, and it comes to us in a natural way, but not by the government, and we need to understand that if we want to live in a free country. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.